Chapter 8. Come out of society, says one. I can't. You don't know what you're talking about. When you have once gone into society, you mustn't come out of it. Then if you'll excuse the freedom, Mr. Chops, were my remark, shaking my head grave, I think it's a pity you ever went in. Mr. Chops shook that deep head of his, to a surprising extent, and slapped it half a dozen times with his hand, and with more vice than I thought were in him. Then, he says, you're a good fellow, but you don't understand. Good night, go along. Maxman, the little man will now walk three times round the caron, and retire behind the curtain. The last I see of him on that occasion was his grin, on the extremest verge of insensibility, to climb up the stairs, one by one, with his hands and knees. They'd have been much too steep for him, if he had been sober, but he wouldn't be helped. It weren't long after that, that I read in the newspaper of Mr. Chops being presented at court. It was printed, it will be recollected, and I've noticed in my life, that it is sure to be printed, that it will be recollected, whenever it won't, that Mr. Chops is the individual of small stature, whose brilliant success in the last state lottery attracted so much attention. Well, I says to myself, such is life. He has been and done it in earnest at last. He has astonished George the Fourth. On account of which, I had that canvas new painted, him with a bag of money in his hand, a presentin' it to George the Fourth, and a lady in ostrich feathers fallin' in love with him in a bag wig, sword, and buckles correct. I took the house as is the subject of present inquiries, though not the honor of being acquainted, and I run Maxman's amusements in it 13 months, sometimes one thing, sometimes another, sometimes nothing particular, but always all the canvases outside. One night, when we had played the last company out, which was a shy company, through its raining heavens hard, I was tacking a pipe in the one pair back along with the young man with the toes, which I had taken on for a month though he never drawed except on paper, and I heard a kicking at the street door. "Hello," I says to the young man, "what's up?" He rubs his eyebrows with his toes, and he says, "I can't imagine, Mr. Maxman," which he never could imagine nothing, and was monotonous company. The noise not leaving off, I laid down my pipe, and I took up a candle, and I went down, and opened the door. I looked out into the street, but nothing could I see, and nothing was I aware of, until I turned round quick, because some creature run between my legs into the passage. There was Mr. Chops. "Maxman," he says, "take me, on the old terms, and you've got me. If it's done, say done." I was all of a maze, but I said, "Done, sir." "Done to your done, and double done," says he. "Have you got a bit of supper in the house?" Bearin' in mind them sparkling varieties of foreign drains as we guzzled away at in Pall Mall, I was ashamed to offer him cold sausages and gin and water. But he took 'em both, and took 'em free, having a chair for his table, and sitting down at it on a stool, like old times. I, all of a maze all the while. It was arter he had made a clean sweep of the sausages, beef, and to the best of my calculations 2 pound and a quarter, that the wisdom as was in, that little man began to come out of him like perspiration. "Maxman," he says, "look upon me. You see afore you, one as has both gone into society and come out." "Oh, you are out of it, Mr. Chops? How did you get out, sir?" "Sold out," says he. "You never saw the like of the wisdom as his head expressed, when he made use of them 2 words. My friend Maxman, I'll impart to you a discovery I've made. It's wallable. It's cost £12,500. It may do you good in life. The secret of this matter is, that it ain't so much, that a person goes into society, as that society goes into a person." Not exactly keeping up with his meaning, I shook my head, put on a deep look, and said, "You're right there, Mr. Chops." "Maxman," he says, twitching me by the leg, "society has gone into me, to the tune of every penny of my property. I felt that I went pale, and though naturally a bold speaker, I couldn't hardly say, "Where's Normandy?" "Bolted. With the plate," said Mr. Chops. "And t'other one?" Meaning him as formerly wore the bishop's mitre. "Bolted. With the jewels," said Mr. Chops. I sat down and looked at him, and he stood up and looked at me. "Maxman," he says, and he seemed to myself to get wiser as he got hoarser, "society, taken in the lump, is all dwarfs. At the court of St. James, they was all a doing my old business all a going three times round the Charon, in the whole court suits and properties. Elsewheres, they was most of them ringing their little bells out of make-believes. Everywheres, the sarser was a going round. Maxman, the sarser is the universal institution." I perceived, you understand, that he was soured by his misfortunes, and I felt for Mr. Chops. "As to fat ladies," he says, giving his head a tremendous one that's in the wall, "there's lots of them in society, and worse than the original. Hers was a outrage upon taste, simply a outrage upon taste, aachen and contempt, carrying its own punishment in the form of a Indian." Here he give himself another tremendous one. "But there's, Maxman, there's his mercenary outrages. Lay in cashmere shawls, buy bracelets, strew em and a lot of handsome fans and things about your rooms, let it be known, that you give away like water to all as come to admire, and the fat ladies, that don't exhibit for, so much down upon the drum, will come from all the pints of the compass to flock about you, whatever you are. They'll drill holes in your art, Maxman, like a colander. And when you've no more left to give, they'll laugh at you to your face, and leave you to have your bones picked dry by welters, like the dead wild ass of the prairies, that you deserve to be." Here he give himself the most tremendous one of all, and dropped. I thought he was gone. His head was so heavy, and he knocked it so hard, and he fell so stony, and the sassagerial disturbance in him must have been so immense, that I thought he was gone. But, he soon come round with care, and he sat up on the floor, and he said to me, with wisdom common out of his eyes, if ever it come, "Maxman, the most material difference between the two states of existence through which your unhappy friend has passed." He reached out his poor little hand, and his tears dropped down on the mustachio which it was a credit to him to have done his best to grow, but it is not in mortals to command success, the difference this. When I was out of society, I was paid light for being seen. When I went into society, I paid heavy for being seen. I prefer the former, even if I wasn't forced upon it. Give me out through the trumpet, in the old way, tomorrow. Arter that, he slid into the line again as easy as if he had been aisled all over. But the organ was kept from him, and no allusions was ever made, when a company was in, to his property. He got wiser every day. His views of society and the public was luminous, bewildering, awful, and his head got bigger and bigger as his wisdom expanded it. He took well, and pulled him in most excellent for 9 weeks. At the expiration of that period, when his head was a sight, he expressed one evening, the last company having been turned out, and the door shut, a wish to have a little music. "Mr. Chops," I said, I never dropped the mister. With him, the world might do it, but not me. "Mr. Chops, are you sure as you are in a state of mind and body, to sit upon the organ?" His answer was this. "Toby, when next met with on the tramp, I forgive her and the Indian. And I am." It was with fear and trembling that I began to turn the handle, but he sat like a lamb. I will be my belief to my dying day that I see his head expand as he sat. You may therefore judge how great his thoughts was. He sat out all the changes, and then he come off. "Toby," he says, with a quiet smile, "the little man will now walk three times round the Charon, and retire behind the curtain." When we called him in the morning, we found him gone into a much better society than Minor Pall Mall's. I give Mr. Chops as comfortable a funeral as lay in my power, followed myself as chief, and at the George IV canvas carried first, in the form of a banner. But the house was so dismal afterwards that I gave it up and took to the one again. I don't triumph, said Jarber, folding up the second manuscript and looking hard at Trottle. I don't triumph over this worthy creature. I merely ask him if he is satisfied now. How can he be anything else? I said, answering for Trottle, who sat obstinately silent. This time, Jarber, you have not only read us a delightfully amusing story, but you have also answered the question about the house. Of course it stands empty now. Who would think of taking it after it had been turned into a caravan? I looked at Trottle as I said those last words, and Jarber waved his hand indulgently in the same direction. Let this excellent person speak, said Jarber. You were about to say, my good man? I only wish to ask, sir, said Trottle doggedly, if you could kindly oblige me with a date or two in connection with that last story. A date? Repeated Jarber. What does the man want with dates? I should be glad to know, with great respect, persisted Trottle, if the person named Maximin was the last tenant who lived in the house. It's my opinion, if I may be excused for giving it, that he most decidedly was not. With those words, Trottle made a low bow, and quietly left the room. There is no denying that Jarber, when we were left together, looked sadly discomposed. He had evidently forgotten to inquire about dates, and, in spite of his magnificent talk about a series of discoveries, it was quite as plain that the two stories he had just read had really and truly exhausted his present stock. I thought myself bound, in common gratitude, to help him out of his embarrassment by a timely suggestion. So I proposed that he should come to tea again on the next Monday evening, the 13th, and should make such inquiries in the meantime as might enable him to dispose triumphantly of Trottle's objection. He gallantly kissed my hand, made a neat little speech of acknowledgement, and took his leave. For the rest of the week I would not encourage Trottle by allowing him to refer to the house at all. I suspected he was making his own inquiries about dates, but I put no questions to him. On Monday evening, the 13th, that dear unfortunate Jarber came, punctual to the appointed time. He looked so terribly harassed that he was really quite a spectacle of feebleness and fatigue. I saw, at a glance, that the question of dates had gone against him, that Mr. Maximin had not been the last tenant of the house, and that the reason of its emptiness was still to seek. What I have gone through, said Jarber, words are not eloquent enough to tell. O Sophonisba, I have begun another series of discoveries. Accept the last two as stories laid on your shrine, and wait to blame me for leaving your curiosity unappeased until you have heard number three. Number three looked like a very short manuscript, and I said as much. Jarber explained to me that we were to have some poetry this time. In the course of his investigations he had stepped into the circulating library to seek for information on the one important subject. All the library people knew about the house was that a female relative of the last tenant, as they believed, had, just after that tenant left, sent a little manuscript poem to them which she described as referring to events that had actually passed in the house, and which she wanted the proprietor of the library to publish. She had written no address on her letter, and the proprietor had kept the manuscript ready to be given back to her, the publishing of poems not being in his line, when she might call for it. She had never called for it, and the poem had been lent to Jarber, at his express request, to read to me. Before he began, I rang the bell for Trottle, being determined to have him present at the new reading, as a wholesome check on his obstinacy. To my surprise, Peggy answered the bell, and told me that Trottle had stepped out without saying where. I instantly felt the strongest possible conviction that he was at his old tricks, and that his stepping out in the evening, without leave, meant philandering. Controlling myself on my visitor's account, I dismissed Peggy, stifled my indignation, and prepared, as politely as might be, to listen to Jarber. 3 evenings in the house. Number 1. It look a dark and dreary that long and narrow street. Only the sound of the rain, and the tramp of passing feet, the duller glow of the fire, and gathering mists of night, to mark how slow and weary the long day's cheerless flight. 2. Watching the sullen fire, hearing the dreary rain, drop after drop, run down on the darkening window pane. Chill was the heart of Bertha, chill as that winter day, for the star of her life had risen only to fade away. 3. The voice that had been so strong to bid the snare depart, the true and earnest will. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.